Morning, hockey. Morning, everybody. Morning to all of our listeners. Thank you for joining us this morning. We had an awesome night of hockey last night. It's your host, Tassos Kirkos, here, bringing it to you this morning. We got Raven Gasser here on the production side of things. And it was a great night for hockey in general, for the growth of the game. How about that Josh Doan debut? Man, I've been waiting a while for that one. And boy, did it deliver. We got our first team punching their ticket to the 2024 Stanley Cup playoffs. That is the New York Rangers, courtesy of an Adam Fox overtime winner. We could get another team joining them in the playoff fray tonight. That will be the Boston Bruins. They will get in if they get just 1 point against the Tampa Bay Lightning this evening. One of two games on tap for you. We will talk about that one a little bit. We'll talk about the games last night. And they were good. They were really good. We got a lot of NHL debuts. We got four of them, not just Josh Doan, but also James Malatesta in the same game for the Columbus Blue Jackets, Logan Morrison for the Seattle Kraken, and Brandon Scanlon for those same New York Rangers that are headed to the playoffs. How are you doing today, Raven?
I'm doing good. I'm actually just kind of going through, searching for some guests to put on the gravel this week, so...
Yeah, man, that would be very exciting. We were supposed to have some guests today. We pushed them off. We're going to keep things a little tighter today, keep things a little shorter, and we will be back tomorrow with some good guests. But we want to just thank all of our guests that have joined us this week, joined us this month, just joined the show in general. They have been really good. We really enjoy bringing different people on the program. Talking with them, just getting their different perspectives, whether they cover different teams, cover the game in general. We're bringing on a guy tomorrow. His name is Bronson Miller, I want to say his last name is. And he's a roller hockey guy. So, you know, and he was very explicit with only wanting to talk roller hockey. Randy Bronson is his name, sorry. And I'm not... particularly a roller hockey person myself. I think it's a really good game. Growing up in South Florida, that's like a lot of what people do in order to try and extend their playing time as far as hockey goes, right? Ice time isn't as readily available as it is in the northern states here or in Canada. So roller hockey definitely has a nice... part of the hockey culture, and here it's really big too. I didn't even realize how big it was in Chicago. Even just the rollerblading community is a pretty big one, but roller hockey in general too. There's always people playing pickup on some of the open rinks we have around here, so that's going to be a really fun hit tomorrow. Really good hit yesterday with Dennis Bernstein. He was really good talking about the Los Angeles Kings. That is a very good team. And we're also at that point now in the season where we can talk about potential playoff matchups. If the playoffs started today, what would we get? And if the playoffs started today, we would get some really awesome matchups. We'd get Vancouver-Nashville, which the Nashville Predators are, we've talked a lot about. They are currently the hottest team in the league. They look like they were dead in the water as most recently is the 14-minute mark of the third period yesterday. They're down 4-1 to Vegas. They get three quick goals, and suddenly it was a new game. Robin Josi scores in overtime. The Preds' point streak is now at 18. That is a really good team, everybody, that is finding it at the right time. You know, we've talked about Robin Josi maybe getting some heart love, some Norris love. I think the case is really there for him. There's a lot of belief in that group. They believe in themselves. A guy like Ryan O'Reilly is playing some awesome hockey for them right now. So is Philip Forsberg. You know, that contract is really looking really nicely, like a nice piece of business by the Nashville Predators. Keep in mind, Philip Forsberg, that was not a guarantee that he was going to stick around in Nashville for the long haul. So... they beat the Vegas Golden Knights 5-4 in overtime yesterday. Man, that is a really good hockey team, and one that if I were the Vancouver Canucks, I would be a little nervous about facing in the first round. We would also get the Oilers and the Kings. We talked about that potential matchup yesterday with Dennis. And We will get those two teams in action tomorrow night as the Kings are in Edmonton to take on the Oilers at Rogers Place. I like the Edmonton Oilers chances in that matchup. I know Dennis was talking about how he feels the Kings match up really well against the Oilers, that team really wants a third crack at the Oilers, having lost to them in the first round the previous two seasons. I still think the Edmonton Oilers find a way to push through in that one. We talk a lot about high-end skill on this show. Different things like, broader topics, high-end skill, how hard you are, how physical and tough you are as a team to play against. But the Edmonton Oilers obviously pulling out a win yesterday. Zach Hyman with the overtime winner in Winnipeg. They're almost starting to find like the little intangibles that are hard to quantify, hard to even talk about, hard to measure. So give me the Oilers in that one. That will be an exciting playoff series. I assume that we will get that and that one will stick the rest of the way. The Central one versus the Wild Card two would be the Dallas Stars taking on the Vegas Golden Knights. That would be a very, very good matchup as well. I mean, there's no better time like the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, but also with the Stanley Cup playoffs comes the understanding that some very good teams are going to be out very early in the playoffs. And in that one, you either have the defending Stanley Cup champs or a lot of people's pick to win the Stanley Cup and the Dallas Stars being out in the first round. So that is one. And then the last Western Conference matchup, if the playoffs started today, would be the Colorado Avalanche taking on the Winnipeg Jets. Colorado seems to be turning it on at just the right time. Nathan MacKinnon is an unstoppable force that we've talked about ad nauseum here on these airwaves. But and Winnipeg seems to have fallen off a little bit here, getting away from the style of play that was making them so successful before, I guess, this last 2 week stretch. But Colorado also dropping a 2-1 decision to the Montreal Canadiens yesterday and ruining my bets. But that was a good game too. Nathan MacKinnon extends his home point streak with that goal, and then Sam Montembeau shuts the door the rest of the way. 27 saves for him. Ends the Avalanche 9-game winning streak in a game that I don't think many people gave Montreal much of a shot, even though we saw Marty St. Louis return behind the bench. They were playing hard for him. They were playing really determined. And you could tell there was just a different kind of focus with that Canadiens group yesterday. On the Eastern side of things, if the playoffs started today, we would get the New York Rangers, who will be in the dance against the Washington Capitals, who pick up a big 2 points over the Detroit Red Wings yesterday. We talked about that being the most important game of the night. And Detroit, if you are the Red Wings, you can't help but feel that, yes, that's an important point to pick up on the road in the grand scheme of things. But that is a wasted opportunity to pick up the second one. And you have to start wondering, maybe has Alex Lyon played too much hockey for them? Will goaltending be the downfall of what was a really, really promising start for the Red Wings? At different points, there were as many as 8-10 points up on a playoff spot, and now they're on the outside looking in, and you have to wonder if goaltending is going to be the thing that is the nail in the coffin for this Red Wings team. Alex DeBrincat with a goal and assist, and David Perron scores, but Dylan Strome gets the overtime winner. He now has a new career high in goals, so he's been really good for them too. So is Connor McMichael, who also got a goal yesterday. But just his overall play away from the puck, same with Hendricks Lapierre. We're talking about these different teams and the incorporation of young talent. Obviously I started the show with the NHL debuts. We're going to get into Josh Doan in a second here, but the Capitals, They sold at the deadline. They trade Joel Edmondson to the Leafs. They trade Anthony Mantha to the Vegas Golden Knights. And all that did was create a bit more opportunity for some of these young guys to feel like they are more a part of the group. And you can tell that translates into more confidence, more, and not just like a confidence that you're not going to be sent down, but even on the ice, a confidence to make plays, a confidence to hold on to the puck, even if it's for a split second longer than maybe you were accustomed to at the start of your NHL career. Capitals have won 6 of 7. They're 2 points up on the Red Wings now for that second wild card spot. John Carlson, too. I mean, A lot has been made about the absence of John Carlson last season, how that was a large part of the unraveling of any potential playoff hope for the Capitals last season. But he's been tremendous. 2 assists for him and Charlie Lindgren with 30 saves. I think he's the starter now in Washington. I know that might not be a scorching hot take. He's already played 40 games, 21 wins, new career high for him in both of those categories. But you have to think that if they get there, this guy has played such a big part in what they've done that even though you have a goalie who has won the Stanley Cup within the last 2 seasons on your bench as a starter, it's going to be hard not to go to Charlie Lindgren game 1 of the playoffs if the Capitals make it there. We will also get the Carolina Hurricanes taking on the Philadelphia Flyers in your Central 2-3 matchup. The Flyers picking up a big point against the New York Rangers in that one, fighting back to tie it. They blew a couple leads. You know, they were up 2-0, but they were down 5-4, and Tyson Forrester gets the goal to tie it late before Adam Fox wins it in overtime. But that is a team, too, that is just you might question the goaltending. Obviously, we saw the Felix Sandstrom comments that John Tortorella made, or didn't make for that matter, saying nothing and then walking off the podium, leaving reporters pretty confused. But the Flyers are a good team. You know, there's no other coach besides John Tortorella that would get them to punch above their weight the way they have this season. So sometimes you understand those tactics. He did actually come out yesterday after we got off air and apologize for that response about the play of Felix Sandstrom in that game, saying that wasn't right, saying that he tried, and that he should have communicated that more than whatever that was that we got on Sunday. And you have to wonder too, if he could do that for Felix Sandstrom, why is it that was not done about the Sean Couturier situation? But you know, the Flyers are still there. They have a pretty easy schedule, pretty soft schedule the rest of the way. So the way they have been playing, the way they even showed last night, like I said, battling back after blowing a lead, showing that grit, showing that character. I mean, these guys like Owen Tippett and Travis Konechny especially, really nice goal on the 2-on-1 rush there. But those guys are hard to play against. They are cerebral in a sense of they know, not just like a lot of people use the word cerebral when describing hockey players in a term of understanding the game, yes, but it's used in like he sees the ice very well, he passes the puck very well. Cerebral can be a how you use your body in terms of separating people from the puck, in terms of just a physical game overall that you bring, and those guys do that. Like Konechny and Tippett and some of these other guys like Forrester too, they're not afraid to use their body in different positions, get in front of shots. You know, you don't play on a John Tortorella team and not really get in front of shots, but that would be a good matchup. Carolina, obviously, we've talked about a lot. They are one of my picks to maybe get to the Stanley Cup final. I would not be too terribly surprised if they ended up getting there. That was a tough loss for them yesterday, and Jake Guentzel's return to Pittsburgh. The Penguins take that one 4-1. Jake Guentzel with some interesting comments after the game. I have the quote here. "My intention was to stay. They thought there was a better direction." That was Jake Guentzel on his trade from Pittsburgh a few weeks ago. You have to wonder about that. And, you know, he is a free agent at the end of the season. There was no extension in place when Carolina traded for the player. I think they are of the understanding that Jake Guentzel might be a rental depending on, you know, how things go. You know, maybe if they win the Stanley Cup or if they get tantalizingly close, they look to re-up the winger. But maybe there's a door for a Jake Guentzel return to Pittsburgh. I don't know. But we will see how that goes. The other matchup, we got 2 more potential playoff matchups. This is prime airtime taken up today, everybody. But Boston Bruins taking on the Tampa Bay Lightning. That would happen. And that matchup is happening tonight, like I mentioned earlier. Boston can clinch a spot in the playoffs with a point in that one tonight. If we got that in the playoffs, though, that would be the Atlantic Division winner versus the first wild card team. Tampa Bay's charging right now. They just wrapped up a really good Western Conference road swing. I know some of those teams are San Jose and Anaheim, but they are still games. You can only play the games that are in front of you, and Tampa Bay keeps winning them. So they're only 3 wins behind the Bruins. They are many points behind the Bruins, but only 3 wins in the standings. And what separates them is a lot of the loser points in that category. But I like Boston, man. They've been really good. Jeremy Swayman has really asserted himself as the guy. That was a really entertaining game against Florida yesterday. Boston takes that one 4-3. Kind of distinguish that separation between them and the Panthers, maybe. I wouldn't be surprised if Boston ends up running away with the division the rest of this season. There's only about 10 or 11 games left for each of these squads. So I really like that playoff matchup. Those are two teams that bowed out in the first round last season in pretty spectacular fashion. If you're the Boston Bruins, I know the Maple Leafs and the Lightning series was a bit more even, but Tampa Bay largely outplayed Toronto for a majority of that series, probably felt that they should have had a better fate. A lot of people are of the belief that this Tampa Bay window has sort of passed them by. Obviously, the Sergachev injury is going to play a large factor, I think, in what kind of run this team is able to make in the postseason. The defense is definitely a bit leaner. No Sergachev, no Ryan McDonough now in the lineup for the Tampa Bay Lightning on that D-core. But I would not put a John Cooper coach team past anybody in a playoff series. Whatever team John Cooper is coaching in a series ends up being the better coach team by the end of it. So that would be an exciting matchup. Leaving us with the Florida Panthers taking on the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first round. If that were to happen, that would be spicy. A rematch of last season's second round matchup that if you are the Leafs, you have to be nervous. I think anybody going up against the Florida Panthers is going to be nervous. That is a team that sticks up for one another. That is a team that is not shy from pretending like there isn't a puck out there for the first 10 minutes of any hockey game that they are in. I think you can't go into a playoff series thinking that you have to treat each game like it's its own series of events. And even you break it down further, period by period, shift by shift. And look, that's how teams win, right? So that would be just a very exciting series, probably not as quick as the second round matchup was last year. And that would be your Stanley Cup playoffs if they began today. They all excite me. I mean, like I said, there is no time in sports. There are a few times, you got the start of March Madness, obviously is a very exciting time in the sports landscape, but that first week of the Stanley Cup playoffs, when you have multiple games every night, all of these series, hockey every night, into the night, you don't have 10 games at the same time or 6 games at the same time, however the NHL does it some nights. But that's one of the best times of the year. And the hockey obviously is a different breed. We know that. These are things that listening to hockey talk radio. But nonetheless, it is still a very exciting time. And there's going to be some good teams that are done very, very early and left wondering what could have been. So that is your playoff matchup tonight. The other game on tap tonight is the Ottawa Senators taking on the Buffalo Sabres at KeyBank. And, those two teams, for a second there, it looked like Buffalo might try and claw their way back into things. For Ottawa, things have gone sideways. We haven't done too much of a deep dive on the Ottawa Senators, and maybe we should one day bring somebody in from that market to talk about that team. Certainly one that had a lot higher expectations going into this season than, frankly, sitting behind the Montreal Canadiens, who were known to be going into this season with very low expectations. Tough season in Ottawa. Jacques Martin has really actually gotten a lot out of this group. I'm very surprised. I know a lot of people felt that when they brought Jacques Martin in that, he's in his 70s and you don't really know what kind of energy and passion and spark that's going to provide in a locker room full of young 20-somethings. If it's more of just an accountability thing, if it's even like a, I don't want to say it, but a grandfatherly role, you know. But he's really coached these guys to playing better hockey. In the games that they do win, it's not as if they are lucky performances, although some of you might point to that game against the Oilers on Sunday and say that was a really good goalie performance by Jonas Korpisalo. But like I said, things have this is a big offseason if you're the Ottawa Senators. Obviously, you're going to have another high pick. I'm sure that doesn't do a lot to appease some of the players on the roster currently. They are not playing for a draft pick. They are playing for standings points and the opportunity to play in the playoffs. However, there is a lot that needs to be done on that defense. You know, you have the Jacob Chikrin question. A lot of really high-end left-shot defensemen. Maybe they look to bring in somebody else that fits that lefty-righty balance a little bit more. You know, I would not be surprised if they look to upgrade the goaltending in some sense. I know they gave a lot to bring in Jonas Korpisalo last year. That contract has not looked good so far. So maybe they look to move off of that, put him in a different scenario where maybe he could play a little bit better hockey, have a team that knows how to play defense in front of him. We talked about Jonas Korpisalo yesterday when we had Dennis on, and he was good for the Los Angeles Kings when they brought him over from Columbus at the deadline last year. He was a very good ad for them. You know, it didn't go the way they wanted it to in the playoffs, but like I said, that was a very high-flying Oilers team. So very interesting offseason in Ottawa, and same goes for Buffalo too. You know, Buffalo was in that group of teams that, you know, included Ottawa and included the Detroit Red Wings, as, you know, the opportunity was going to be there. Nobody really expected Philly to be where we were. And, you know, I think a lot of people expected New Jersey to be in the spot that Philadelphia is in right now, in that three, maybe even two spot in the Metro division, right? But then there was always that last playoff spot up for grabs, right? If you assume that these other teams were kind of going to make the playoffs, which a lot of them were pretty much givens off the hop. You know, I don't know that a lot of people really gave the New York Islanders much of a runway. Same goes for the Caps and the Pens. So that opportunity was going to always exist for one of those three teams to really make the jump. And like I said, Detroit did that. They were very good at the start of this season. That cannot be understated, just how good it was. And I think, you know, the consensus I've heard about, like, from Detroit talk radio people and people who I know that are fans of the team, if you had told them at the beginning of the season that this is where they would be come March 27th at 10 in the morning, they would have taken it. However, with the context of what happened at the beginning of the season in mind, the fact that you were in the playoffs by such a large margin and things have now kind of gone sideways, it's tough to look at that and say, hey, like that was really what we wanted. Like, no, they wanted to make the playoffs. They want playoff hockey in Little Caesars Arena. From everything I've heard, it's one of the nicest arenas in the National Hockey League. They want playoff revenue in there. They want playoff games. They want playoff tickets sold. So, but that opportunity was always going to exist. And, you know, Buffalo finished really close. I think they were a point out when all was said and done last season. You know, a pretty inspired run with Devin Levi between the pipes after he joined them from Northeastern at the end of his college season last year. Things obviously didn't go the way they wanted for him at the beginning of this year. Even though he's been tremendous for Rochester, was tremendous in that game that he was thrown to the Wolves in against the Vancouver Canucks, in a game that really marked whether they would make a good go at it for the playoffs for the rest of the way. But I don't know that anybody expects Buffalo to really try and make a go of it now. So those, like I said, that not to spend too much time on a matchup tonight that does not really bear too much weight on anything that has to do with the playoffs or the standings the rest of the way. But those are two very interesting teams. Like I said, I've really been, you know, I've been trying to get somebody on the Buffalo side of things to come on and talk, but they're nervous to talk about the Buffalo Sabres on air, let's just say. It's hard when your team is good. You don't want to jump on other shows and bash the team. Say that, you know, the people that you're close with, the people that you cover on a day-to-day basis are not doing a good job at their jobs, even if they might not be. That's a tough conversation to have. So Big off seasons ahead for both of those clubs, so we will get that one. And I think it's time. I mean, I am almost surprised with myself that I didn't start the show off with this one, just because it was a bit of an I told you so moment when Josh Doan not only gets called up for his NHL debut yesterday, his dad, Shane, in attendance. And I have to just take a moment here for Shane Doan. Part of the reason why, not only, you know, I saw Josh Doan when he was young, right before he got drafted by the Coyotes, win a Clark Cup championship with the Chicago Steel. We talked about that yesterday when we were mentioning the Jack Pert signing. However, you know, Shane Doan was one of my favorite players growing up. He just, the style of play, the way he spoke to the media, to other fans, to teammates, the way he was documented, the way, really everything about the guy, the dedication he had to hockey in Arizona was really admirable. He could have gone and chased a Stanley Cup at any point in his career and did not. And there is a lot to be said about a guy that plays over 1,500 games with one franchise. That is a lot in hockey. Hockey, I think it means something. I don't know if it really means more. I think it might. I'll throw this out there. I think it means more in hockey to stay with one team your entire career than it does just about any other sport. Nowadays, you don't really see team loyalty, franchise loyalty. It's players looking out for what is in the best interest of themselves. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing, but it does lead to some bouncing around of players to different markets. A lot of that guy plays there kind of conversations amongst fans of the sport. So what Shane Doan was able to do and just how he played too. You know, I saw a lot of myself in Shane Doan, right shot guy. Not necessarily the most offensively skilled. I remember when he got his first NHL hat trick at the last second of that game. I forgot who they were playing, but it was a big moment in my household. I remember watching that one late and really getting excited at that. You know how much that one meant to him. It took him a very, very long time to get his first NHL hat trick, but just a really hard-nosed kind of guy, really great leader, one of the best leaders in the game when he was in the game. So to see that next wave come into the National Hockey League, it's cool. It is really cool. I mean, we haven't really seen that. You know, I would love to see that with the Florida Panthers. We're not at that point just quite yet, where there have been some esteemed alumni of the Panthers that have had children that have gone on to have success in the league. There are guys with obviously ties to the South Florida area that, you know, do make it and have, you know, a lot of retired guys do make their home down there and they find their way to having their children play high levels of hockey, but none with the Panthers quite yet. We'll get to that point at some point in the near future. Let's hope Jake Chychrun ends up a Florida Panther, but that is just my own personal hockey take. I would love to see that happen, but the Josh Doan debut, long drink of water to get there, but I loved it. I mean, it was really cool. You could tell how just how much it meant to the fans of the Coyotes that were in the building. They were educated hockey fans. This is not the first season in Arizona back in the 90s. This is now. They all know Shane Doan. There were a lot of Shane Doan sweater. There were a lot of Doan 19 sweaters in the building. I thought it was a really nice touch that he's going to wear 91 and not his dad's 19, obviously, but just flipping the numbers around. Obviously, he's made it a point of emphasis that he is a different player than his dad, clearly, because it took his dad 17 games to get his first goal. Josh got two in his first game. Really nice ones, too. I mean, the first one, batting the puck out of the air, that's just a high-skill play. The second one, it's a nice tip. That's a really nice tip. I don't even know that a lot of people thought it was his goal right off the hop, pretty clearly afterward. You know, you look at the replay, and he definitely got a stick on that one right below the crossbar that looked at it for a second. I don't think there was any chance that goal was coming off the board. Ended up standing as the game winner. The Coyotes beat the Blue Jackets 6-2. Tough game for Elvis Merzlikins. How about that rip he gave up to Dylan Genther at the end of the game, too, on the breakaway? I mean, you get a breakaway in the NHL, you shoot the puck hard. And this is the one thing that I think I've seen, something I've tried to pay attention to a little bit more, is who shoots the puck really hard. And in the NHL, the answer is everybody. But there are times when you have an open look and some guys feel they can just tap it in, chip it in, flip it in. You know, in my opinion, if you are going to score a goal in that league, you got to rip it as hard as you can, every single opportunity you can. And Dylan Genther had a breakaway earlier in that third period that he kind of flubbed on a little bit. So he was going to make no mistake on that last one there. But you could just tell that meant a lot to the Doan family. Obviously, mom and dad were in attendance and all of the siblings, and they were having a really nice time in that box. So just a great moment all around, probably the best moment of the night. He is also the first Coyotes player in that franchise's history to score two or more goals in their NHL debut. So, you know, I love it. That was really cool. Also just seeing somebody, like I said, who played for the Junior Coyotes, played for Arizona State, played for the Tucson Roadrunners, and now the Coyotes. That's cool, man. Like, you don't really get that ever. And I don't know. It would be like someone for the Hawks here playing for like the Mission and then going. I mean, we don't even have college hockey here, which is absurd, right? I've had my gripe with that for a long time, but somebody here can't even do that. You know what I'm saying? And this is a well-established hockey market. Hockey is thriving here in Chicago. I would never say that it is struggling. The NHL team has its home secured at the United Center for a very long time. And even if they didn't, they would figure it out rather quickly. But to complete that full circle journey, I just think is something that you don't really get in the NHL a lot of the time. Raven is just sending me someone who died. And here you go. I don't know who this is, Raven. Paul Masnick. Rest in peace to him, first of all. But I don't know who that is. The oldest surviving member of the Montreal Canadiens Stanley Cup win, 1953. So let's do a quick deep dive on Paul Masnick then. Well, this is just great radio today. Great podcasting. 92 years old. Wow. Oldest member of the Canadiens, Barrie, Ontario native. Scored a famous OT goal in the 1951 semifinal. And I remember that well. Just kidding. Skated on Dick Irvin Sr.'s 1952-1953 Canadiens, won the Stanley Cup against the Boston Bruins.
Played it for the Chicago Blackhawks in 1954-55.
Oh, did he? Look at that. Just reading a little bit more about him here. That guy was old. I hate to say it. I don't know what to say about this guy.
Raven, I mean, just threw me the... It's the 1950s hockey, so it's like...
Probably the one name on that team that I also just like didn't know. Like, he's, you know, like I profess to be a guy who's, you know, I've read a lot of books about hockey, kind of a hockey nerd myself. Love old time stories being told. But, you know, like these names, you know, GM Frank Selke, obviously Bernie Jeffrion on the team. Elmer Locke is a legend as far as old hockey history goes. But man, you just maybe threw at me the one player that might have stopped me dead in my tracks there. And he died too, which just doesn't help things at all. So I, you know, rest in peace to him and hope his family is doing well. But geez, oh man, that was a curveball thrown at me there. Just a quiet night in the NHL tonight. Obviously, like I said, the Bruins can clinch with a point against that team. Oh, I did want to spend a minute talking about Wyatt Johnston here. Two goals and an assist. Obviously, Dallas doubles up the Sharks 6-2-3 at the SAP Center on Tuesday night. And first of all, I just want to say that if you are in San Jose, and I don't know that we have any listeners in San Jose, but if you are in San Jose, buy a ticket to a Sharks game. Even if you're a couple hours out, go buy a ticket to a Sharks game. I mean, these are pitiful attendance numbers we are seeing. And you know that teams sometimes, you know, I've worked for a team that did the same thing, fudged the numbers on the attendance on the game sheet afterward to say it was a little bit more full than you might have remembered. But then you watch back at the highlights or the broadcast and you may call into question a little bit the validity of what they say was the attendance in that night. But, you know, go watch hockey in San Jose. I know the team is bad. I know they're playing out the string here. There's not that many games left, but the attendance numbers are not very good. And you have reason to have hope. Obviously, William Eklund is a very good player. I have a Will Smith stat here that I wanted to bring out just because this player is probably one of my favorite young guys that are not playing in the NHL currently. Most points for a draft plus one NCAA player in the last 20 years. Kyle Connor leads the pack with 71 points. Will Smith this season is number two on that list with 67, followed by Brock Besser and Logan Cooley, each with 60. And then Will Smith's teammate Gabe Perreault, New York Rangers first-round draft pick last season, below them at 57. Will Smith's a really good player, folks. I mean, you know, we talked about that four-goal game in the Hockey East Championship against Boston College. This is a player to get excited about. He is somebody that just brings a certain swagger, brings a certain coolness. Like, I, you know, you got to make hockey cool, first of all. Not just, you know, in general. We're not talking big picture here. Just in a market when you're having a rebuild. And look, Will Smith, whether he decides to join the team at the start of next season, he decides to sign his ELC at the end of his college season this year with the Eagles, or decides to go back for a sophomore season there and then sign with the Sharks at the end of that season, it is not going to be a good team. It is just, they're not going to be good. There's no way that this is going to be turned around even within the next 2 or 3 years. So, one, I would not fault Will Smith if he decided to go back to Boston College for another season, even though I do personally feel like he has nothing left to prove at that level. Why not stay with a really good team where you're playing against older competition? It's not the National Hockey League, yes, but, you know, you're still going to play with some guys. I would anticipate that Ryan Leonard goes back. I would anticipate Gabe Perreault goes back. Same with Jacob Fowler. So you'll have an opportunity to contend for a national championship if they don't skate away with it this season. I would expect Cutter Gauthier to turn pro at the end of this season, by the way. But that is still going to be a very good Boston College team. And, you know, I wouldn't be super surprised if that is the route he decides to take. But even still, you got to make hockey cool. You know, and you bring in a guy like Will Smith, you're going to have another high pick at the draft this year. If you are the Sharks, you hope it's Macklin Celebrini, who obviously has ties to the area. You know, you get those three together. First of all, you get the BCBU situation with Smith and Celebrini. But the air that would bring, like, you could tell with the Josh Dunn situation yesterday, like, that meant so much to the people of Arizona. I would not even be surprised if they use this kid as not leverage, but almost like a, hey, this works here. Look at this kid. He is a product. He is our native son. And obviously you have guys like Matthew Nyes and Austin Matthews both playing their trade for the Toronto Maple Leafs that are also from Arizona. But that being said, to have one of your own skate for your own is kind of its own thing. And it brings credit to what the Arizona Coyotes have done, you know? Josh Stone was a Coyotes fan. Yes, his dad was the captain of the team, but he made mention before the game yesterday how he feels a part of a lot of the fans that are, you know, have been season ticket holders for a very long time with the Coyotes. And, you know, just a very a good thing for hockey in that area. So same goes for the Sharks. I know it was a tough season for them. And this was, you know, starting off for me wanting to talk about Wyatt Johnston. But I couldn't bring up them pounding on the San Jose Sharks, who, you know, are pretty lifeless at this point. We can lay all of our chips on the table. They are 1-14-3 in their past 18 games. They've also lost 8 straight. So I'm not trying to pick on them. And I also don't want to just say, hey, you know, Wyatt Johnston did this against the Colorado Avalanche. He did not. He did it against the San Jose Sharks. But, man, Wyatt Johnston may be the second coming of insert really talented player here. I honestly don't have a player comparison off the top of my head. I've tried to think of one the last 24 hours for Wyatt Johnston. I can't. Part of me thinks of the guy that they made a statue for outside in Dallas a few weeks ago, Mike Modano. Wyatt Johnston is a little bit smaller, plays a little bit smaller. Not that Mike Modano was an overly physical guy, but he just, like, played, you know, a bit bigger, skated a bit bigger. But Wyatt Johnson has everything. I mean, the shot, the hands, the vision, the shiftiness in his game. Just such an impressive player. And to be doing what he's doing at 20 years old is incredible. I mean, this isn't even his first season in the National Hockey League. This is his second. And, you know, he's 2 points away from 100 on his career. He's only played 155 games. He's got 57 points in 73 games this year. He's going to hit 30 goals. So just a really, really, first of all, just a great pickup where the Stars got him in the draft, you know, 23rd overall. Not a high-end first-round pick, but I'm sure if you redid 2021 that Wyatt Johnson would certainly land higher on a majority of people's boards. So really consistent too, you know, not more than two or three games ever really go by where Wyatt Johnson does not put up a point at the very least. I'm trying to think here. Obviously, he went two games against Pittsburgh and Arizona without points. But other than that, like, this guy really doesn't go more than two games without a point. I think he's done it once this whole season. So an earmark of consistency is what Wyatt Johnston is. So really impressive young player. I didn't want to say that he did this and he's so great and not really paint the whole picture as far as who the team on the other side was. Yes, the San Jose Sharks are not very good, everybody. We know that. Jason Robertson also gets two goals. And Jamie Benn, you know, and maybe we should talk more about Jamie Benn, because, you know, I have all day for Jason Robertson. One of my favorite players to watch personally in the NHL, leads the Stars in scoring in a year that, if you asked him candidly, he would probably say it's a down season, even though he has 74 points in 73 games. You would certainly imagine that Jason Robertson wishes he put a few more pucks in the back of the net. To that, I would say shoot it a bit more, Jason. But Jamie Benn, he's currently playing with the aforementioned Wyatt Johnston, and he's also playing with call-up Logan Stankoven, who I have said on here was probably the best addition that the Stars made at the trade deadline, and it didn't cost them a thing. Jamie Benn has points in 7 straight games, everybody. Jamie Benn is having a very, very nice season. I mean, you know, there was a period of time with the Dallas Stars that I'm sure a lot of people will remember where, you know, Jamie Benn carries a large cap hit. So does Tyler Seguin. They both carry a 9.5 cap hit, if I'm not mistaken. They were called out by Stars ownership for not being the pillars of the franchise that they should be with that cap hit. Now, obviously, you draft and develop players like Robertson, Ottinger, Heiskanen, Hintz, you know, Wyatt Johnston, and Logan Stankoven. And yeah, the burden comes off those guys a little bit. You're able to make a few more free agent additions. Mason Marchman has played a lot better recently for them. You know, you make the Chris Tanev deal. That all being said, there was a period of time where people believed that the decline for Jamie Benn was going to be steep and something that was not going to be able to be recovered from. But Jamie Benn put up 78 points last season, which I don't think a lot of people really remember. This comes after seasons of 46 points, 35 and 52, and 39 and 69. I don't know that a lot of people really thought that this was in the cards for Jamie Benn. But here he stands, playing with two young guys, two very young guys, who, you know, probably bring a bit of spark into his game, bring a bit of that youthful energy that we talk a lot about. That is certainly a thing. You know, the legs move a little quicker. The pace of play is a little bit higher when you're playing with young guys. And look, Jamie Benn has a lot that he can teach them. Logan Stankoven is not a perfect player. Neither is Wyatt Johnston. When they come off the ice for a shift, you see Jamie Benn talking with them, conversing with them. He is a great cap. We're talking about Shane Doan being one of the great captains of the NHL. When Jamie Benn hangs him up and all is said and done, we will look back and say, wow, that was one of the best captains in the National Hockey League when he was in this league. And what he did for Dallas, taking over for Brendan Morrow, that is a guy that has done a really good job for the Dallas Stars. So that is a Stanley Cup contender in my eyes. I really like what they've done. A few more news and notes here. Eustis Sandin gets a 2-year extension with the Colorado Avalanche. He's played a lot better lately. I know there was a lot of talk about them maybe bringing in another goaltender at the deadline to alleviate Alexander Georgiev, who's played a lot of games, leads the NHL in wins, but that is because of the amount of games he's played. You know, there are a lot of nights where you're left scratching your head because of Georgiev's play. But they feel like he can, Anunin being, they feel he can be a good, solid backup for them. He's only, you know, gotten into, you know, less than 15 games. You know, he's got a 5-3-1 record, but a 926 save percentage, only 9 starts this season. So, you know, they play Georgiev a lot. So I think the hope with Anunin is that you are able to eventually pull back on the starts from Georgiev as soon as next season, because that is a lot of hockey. And I would not be surprised if, you know, we've talked about goalies. Like, I've talked a lot about goalies here running out of steam come playoff time. You know, last year we saw it with Ottinger. We saw it a bit with Connor Hellebuck. We might be starting to see it with Connor Hellebuck now, although I might give that more of a credence to the Jets' defensive play in front of them. I think you got to give Anunin some more starts the rest of the way. Obviously, they haven't been too shy to play him, and he played yesterday against the Montreal Canadiens in that loss. But it's a good signing. It's a good signing for the Avalanche. You know, the hope is that this guy can build on this game. And it says here, McFarland told the Denver Avalanche DNVR podcast that goalie Pavel Francouz is unlikely to play in the NHL again because of a lower body injury sustained last season. That is a tough blow for Pavel Francouz, who is a very good netminder in his own right. I have a soft spot for anybody that catches with their right hand in the NHL. But it's been a while since we've seen him. He only got into 16 games last season, none this season, obviously, but a very good netminder whenever he was able to get into NHL action. 919 save percentage in 73 career games. Does have that Stanley Cup on his resume with that team. So, you know, nice to see that. A few more news and notes here. Coyotes coach Andre Tourigny is expected to be the head coach for Canada at the World Championships this year. That is according to Darren Dreger of TSN. So, a few more things here. Oh, PWHL, they're on a break now for the Women's World Championships, and it's kind of a long break. So they will return to action. Let me look up the exact date. I think it's April 18th, if I'm not mistaken. But Toronto currently leads the league April 18th. I was right. Yeah, they will return to action on April 18th. Like I mentioned, Toronto leading the standings by a point, followed by Minnesota at 35 and Montreal and Ottawa, who have snuck in and played a lot better hockey lately. We talked about that with Chris Sinclair last week, but very good, very interesting team. And one interesting note here about the PWHL. So I guess things haven't been going super well for, you know, PWHL New York hasn't really been playing a lot of hockey in New York, from what I understand. I have to admit, of all the PWHL teams, that is probably the one that I've watched the least of, and I think it's by a wide margin of my own personal viewing that I haven't really caught a lot of their action. But they've been playing their games in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and a lot of the consensus seems to be that it is just not working. So I've heard that the games that they play at UBS Arena on Long Island are really fun and exciting games. And it seems like that they are going to replace one of the games that was supposed to be in Bridgeport. They're going to move it to the Prudential Center in New Jersey, home of the New Jersey Devils. So that's exciting. I mean, look, like these teams, like these, the neutral site games, the games that they put in the NHL arenas, they've been big hits, right? So I think it's good to have that self-awareness to be able to understand that maybe something isn't working and to reevaluate and make a different decision and not try and force something that maybe isn't there. If there's no appetite for hockey and women's hockey in Bridgeport, Connecticut, then there's no need for it, right? Pull it. You know, I've heard from some people. I heard ahead of Greg Wyshynski's from ESPN and The Drop that This team just doesn't play in New York. They don't have a lot of connection to the city of New York. And I understand that, you know, you're going to call a team a New York team. That is kind of a New York area thing. Obviously, you have like the New York Jets and Giants, right? And don't they both play out of Jersey Raven, if I'm not mistaken?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure too. But I don't know. I'm not a big NFL guy. But, you know, if you're going to, you know, it would be like calling a team in the Chicago. I mean, like, look, they call teams Chicago. Like, I'm trying to think. You in hockey, you get the Chicago Steel. They don't play in Chicago. They play in St. Charles, Illinois, which is about an hour away from here, right? I think the Steel have their own sort of fan base that comes out. And we're talking junior hockey here. We're not talking pro hockey. But, you know, the Steel has their fans that live in St. Charles that go there. They all go to high school in St. Charles. So I'm sure a lot of the high school kids out there go there. To the games, that is, but you got to be able to kind of establish a connection there. And I'm not saying you move the team anywhere or you think to relocate the club. That doesn't really make sense. I would anticipate those six markets sticking. But I would say, like, don't be shy to put yourself in New York City. You know, I know MSG is kind of a tough place, but I'm sure there is another arena, and I will do a bit more research and come back to this topic a bit more educated than me just reacting to news. But there's got to be another arena outside of MSG that can house, you know, probably the attendance that they're looking for, 5,000 to 7,000 on a consistent basis, that, you know, you put it right in the heart of Manhattan or something like that, they're going to go, right? And then the beauty of these things is you can split up games, right? You can put some games in New Jersey, you can put some games on Long Island, and even once a year, you can put a game in Madison Square Garden, right? And I'm sure people would show up to that. So, that was my PWHL note. I guess things are not working out in Bridgeport, Connecticut, which, you know, if you asked me, isn't the biggest shocker in the entire world. But the Women's World Championships are coming up soon. We'll be talking about those, maybe even try and get like a player on or something, from one of the clubs. That would be really cool. Teams are starting to put out rosters for that. I'm just looking up when that starts. It is going to be in New York this year, Utica, from what I understand. So everybody's kind of gearing up and getting ready for that. April 3rd is the start date for that. So we got about a week before we get going with that one. A lot of world championships happen around. We're going to get, I've been speaking with a guy who runs a hockey Instagram account called Hockey Worldwide. If you are a fan of hockey and you are a really, you know, fan of international hockey, fan of, you know, the growth of the game all over the world, seeing what other countries are doing, I'd give this guy a follow. His name is Dylan Baker, is his personal. I'm sure he wouldn't mind me saying that, but really, really nice guy. He's going to come on the show, but this is a very busy time for him, seeing as he covers every level of every world championship that the IIHF puts on. Including the, you know, the domestic, like, Raven, this guy's, like, watching, like, the Kazakhstan Hockey League Championship and, like, watching the games, like watching full 60-minute hockey games. And it's not even just that. Like, we're talking, like, Singapore ice hockey and South Africa, you know, hockey league. And, like, this guy is watching full games of these leagues and, you know, deducing different things. So he's a really interesting cat. We're going to bring him on at some point soon, probably at the end of the hockey season, or at least at the end of the international hockey season, which kind of ties in pretty close to the Stanley Cup playoffs. The NHL is one of the last leagues to wrap up their season, though. So we'll probably bring him on around the playoff time or maybe even a little bit afterward in order to stretch content out. But that is some interesting stuff. We will have our own coverage of the Women's World Championships. We'll be talking about it a little bit here and there. Probably looking to bring on a person or two, maybe a player or two, to talk about the experience. It would have been cool to go to too. It is in it's in Utica, New York, which is it's a good spot. There's a lot of fun stuff to do in Utica. I've been out there. You know, maybe not a ton to do in Utica, New York, but it's a fun place. It is. It's a good time. It's a good time. So anybody going to watch the games will have a lovely time enjoying that. I'm trying to see where the next World Championships is for the women. Next year it is in the Czech Republic, and then in 2026 it is in Canada at a place to be determined. So If you are in the United States, go check that out. We're going to wrap here. Just wanted to give a shout out more to the guys that made their NHL debuts last night. Not just Josh Doan, obviously, but James Malatesta played pretty good for the Blue Jackets yesterday. So did Logan Morrison for the Kraken. They picked up the win 4-0 of the Ducks. That's cool. The Kraken are starting to not be super shy about calling up some of these guys. Ryan Winterton's a guy that's gotten a few games up with the big club lately. Shane Wright. Give me Shane Wright for the Kraken a little bit. You know, we're at that point. You only got 11 games left. Give this kid some shots. And Brandon Scanlon, I don't know how many more games he's going to play. I have to admit, I didn't notice him a whole heck of a lot yesterday, but nice to see those guys get their NHL debuts out of the way. That has got to be a really cool moment. Just Jesse Puljujärvi also has goals in back-to-back games for Pittsburgh. And one more note about a young guy here who, really has gotten a lot of hate on the internet. I've been pretty critical of this guy too, Juraj Slafkovský. New record for most points by a teenager in Montreal Canadiens history. That is an old team, considering Raven brought up a 90-something-year-old guy that passed away today that I had not heard of. That is a very old and well-respected franchise. Congrats to Juraj Slafkovský on that. He's played so much better lately, obviously, playing with the big guys, Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield. Yes, a little bit of that record might have to be the fact that he, got a lot of games from the start of last season up until this point. A lot of opportunity to get that point record, but even still, you got to be able to put the puck in the back of the net at some rate in order to be able to do that. Short episode for us here today. Hope everybody has a great rest of your day. Go listen on The Gravel if you haven't already. It's really good. These guys are awesome. Really doing good stuff for us, and we really enjoy having them on our network. And Smooth Operations is the name of the show. But if you type in On The Gravel F1 on YouTube, they're the first thing that comes up. How about that? So, easy find. Go find it. Subscribe. Give the video a thumbs up. Then hop on to Spotify. Give it 5 stars. Give it a rating. Do the same on Apple Pod if that is your jam. Do the same for this show. And we really thank everybody for joining us today. Enjoy the hockey today. We'll be back tomorrow.